From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hope you had a great weekend. We're back in action today. Wham, 15 days and counting. 15 days to go until we have an election for the next president of the United States. My hope is we get a clean winner. Too big to rig is what the Trump people say. Kamala Harris is saying, how could you elect this guy? You got to be kidding me. Adam Bowler is going to be with us at the bottom of the hour, founder and CEO of Rubicon Founders. He's one of the architects of the Abraham Accords, real sense of what's happening in the Middle East. Jason Chaffetz in studio, fresh off his African safari. We'll talk to him about that. And also, on a unrelated note, why America is so obsessed with Chinese pandas. You did not find any pandas out there in Africa, right?
No, nor did I find any dogs dressed as pandas.
Right.
Neither one.
You left. They spray painted the dogs and the pandas started barking.
Yes.
And that was a giveaway.
Yes.
Let's get to the victory.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The danger to this country is the policies of Biden and Harris. Her fingerprints are all over this disaster. And I can't take four more years of this crap.
Lindsey Graham was so fed up. Israel has strengthened their hand by ignoring Harris and Biden and taking out their terror enemies. Now blowing up Hezbollah financial institutions and what remains of Hamas. Next up, Iran. But a leak could change their plans.
Number two.
Nikki is in. Nikki is helping us already. But people keep saying, when are you bringing? They don't say, when are you bringing this one? Everybody is in. And Nikki is already in. You know, she's out campaigning.
Finally reaching across, kind of. Final weeks, and Trump reaches out to Haley and Harris campaigns with Liz Cheney. I know. Will this deliver the voters that could flip the razor-thin election in the seven battleground states?
Number one.
This is a real acceleration for Trump. I always warn people as a pollster, anything can happen in 3 weeks. And I wonder what could happen that's external that could change things, because certainly the pandemic, although much further out, that changed 2020. So anything can happen.
I don't know. It's going to be very hard to shock and surprise the Trump people. They've been through so much over the last 8 years. 15 days to go as both campaigns pan their opponents in their darkest manner possible. But only Trump has called out for it. We discussed the sprint to victory. So, Congressman, when you left, you went to Africa. You would tell me about it. When you left, were you detached? Were you at a cell range where you really did not know what was
going
on?
I can check in about once a day. So, okay. But I can tell you, having been back now for a couple days, Donald Trump is rocking it. The vibe's really good. I mean, he's winning each day. You're day by day now in this campaign. You got to win that news cycle, and certainly what happened to McDonald's and all the other things. Donald Trump is dominating.
Trump's going to be today. He's going to be in North Carolina looking at the hurricane victims, yeah. How they bounce back. There is a scramble right now. 4.5 million people have voted already. And although that's behind the pandemic, it is, for Republicans, a much bigger early voter turnout. That's what you guys were saying. Last time, you're like, we want Election Day. You can't change it as of now. So get out early. That message seems to be getting across. Harris will be in Pennsylvania, Oakland County, will be in Oakland County, Michigan, and Brookfield, Wisconsin. Waltz will be in New York. They just want to keep him at bay. I mean, he's a disaster. Your thoughts about, first off, how you feel about everything, because in August, September, the vibe was all Harris, and Trump was kind of railing that he couldn't get at Biden anymore. And that's changed now. Here we are in October.
Well, look, yeah, Governor Shapiro of Pennsylvania asked a very basic question about how Kamala Harris is going to be different than Joe Biden, and couldn't name a single thing. In fact, I still think Kamala Harris's biggest problem is she's Kamala Harris. And the other thing that's going on behind the scenes, I think, is in Pennsylvania. You have a very good David McCormick, who is a very competent candidate, running against a blah, if you will, Bob Casey, one of the most ineffective and just absent members in the United States
Senate.
Nobody
does anything.
You never hear
just
about it.
Just votes with Biden all
and
the time.
And now he's running a commercial talking about how he's close to what Donald Trump did. Even Slotkin, the candidate,
Elise Slotkin
in Michigan, touting that she supported something that Donald Trump was supportive, using Trump's name. You don't see the candidates using Kamala Harris's likeness. You see him using Donald Trump.
Reportedly, Slotkin told Harris, don't campaign with me. Asked for Obama.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what tells you. And look, you got to have hard feelings, thick skin if you're a politician. Remember George W. Bush, two-term president, first got to get reelected. John McCain said, listen, you got 27% approval rating. I can't come out with you. Joe Biden, invisible now for Harris. So he's insulted. So whatever faction of the Democratic Party Biden still has, I'm not sure. Maybe there's some old-time guys. Whatever faction he has, they've been told just stay away. Harris can answer the question. Now, about Harris couldn't answer 2 weeks ago to The View and to Colbert. What are you going to do different? How would you be different? And this is what you're talking about with Shapiro. Now, they've had a week to prepare. He's a much better politician than she is or Waltz is. Cut 24.
Can you name one key policy difference between Vice President Harris and President Biden? How would her administration look different?
You know, I've been really encouraged by the amount of energy that Kamala Harris, Vice President Harris, has put into focusing on how she will cut taxes for small businesses. The focus on child care tax credit expansion, that's something I've done here in Pennsylvania. We've seen that work to ease the burden on families. I think a focus on those kinds of things is particularly important. And those are the kinds of things I think Kamala Harris has brought specifically to this race.
Those aren't necessarily differences, though. They're an expansion or a tweak to some extent to what's been done. Can you name one policy difference?
Listen, again, the contrast I am focused on, Kristen, is between her and Donald Trump.
And evidently, when she came out, Jason, and said, I'm not Joe Biden. And when he laughed, you know who got insulted?
Joe Biden. Yeah.
Said, yeah, I'm not a washed up 82-year-old dementia-laden person. And I'm not Joe Biden. Everyone laughs. Well, I don't know. Number one, he should get thicker skin. Number two is he never should have run for re-election if he really cared about the country.
Right.
And Jill and his family should have stopped him. And if he cared about his party, he still didn't want to go. Today, the story comes out that behind the scenes, after that debate, and after his interview with George Stephanopoulos, Nancy Pelosi waited for the guys to step up, Clinton and Obama, and say, Joe, you got to go. And they didn't. So she had to go do it. With Joe's got to make a decision if he's going to run. Remember that interview?
Yeah.
I'm going to run. Well, make a decision. I'm going to run. Make a decision. Remember that whole thing with the Tonight Show? So this is crazy drama. If Harris wins, we never get the real story. If Harris loses, we have this is going to be like Page Six to the 10th power inside the Democratic combustion.
Well, they already know the story. They're just not brave enough to print it before the election because they're all in the tank for wanting to get Kamala Harris elected. I think there are savvy reporters who have the inside story and they're holding it because they don't want Donald Trump to win. But going back to the vibe and what's happened in the last 15 days with millions of votes still to come in, the idea that Kamala Harris is bringing on Liz Cheney to be the person that's going to moderate the discussions with her? What is that? Show me the faction out there that is pro Liz Cheney and show me the Democrats that get excited by a Dick Cheney semi-endorsement. Are you kidding me? That's where the Democrats are trying to troll for votes right now?
Because she hasn't changed.
No.
Kamala Harris allegedly changed on fracking, on decriminalized border crossings, on everything. But Liz Cheney goes, no, I'm a really conservative. She's more conservative than Trump, more conservative than almost anybody in the House, more conservative than Kevin McCarthy. So she was the most conservative out of leadership, wouldn't you think?
Yes, on most things.
Yeah.
But, man, she has this Trump derangement syndrome. But
so she's going to moderate with somebody she has no respect for.
Yeah.
You know she has no respect for her. And she's going to say things like, you know, the Palestinians have a point. What are you kidding me? Hamas has a point. You know, who started this war? All these things, you know exactly how she feels because we listen to her dad and she's to the right of her dad. So she's going to go moderate and try to make her look good by asking her what? The weather? They don't agree on anything.
Well, how about energy policy? You know, going back to Governor Shapiro said, I like her energy, not her energy policy.
No,
they just like her personal energy. What is that?
Well, she walked away when she was asked, are you going to expand our oil and gas program? So, no, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Do you think Liz Cheney compatible with that? I just don't know who sits back and says, boy, I really haven't decided. But boy, Liz Cheney likes her, so I'm going to like her. And who wants to go see an angry, grumpy? I mean, that is not a tour of joy to have Liz Cheney out there. That's the thing. They talk about joy and patriotism at their convention, but who actually lives it and does it? Donald Trump, he's going to football games. He's working at McDonald's. You got J.D. Vance serving beers.
But here's the other story. And I think it's a big deal. She never worked at McDonald's. And here's why it's a big deal. It's because she made it part of a biography. You can relate to me. I'm middle class Kamala Harris. I worked at McDonald's when I was in law school. All right. Kept saying it. They go, where? Who'd you work with? Nobody's worked with her. Nobody owns up to it. No W-2s to find. So Trump is in her face. And by the way, I like to see her in a McDonald's because, like the hunter, Governor Waltz, who can't load his own gun, right? I'm not saying I'm not a hunter. If you hand me a gun, I go, how do you load this? I wouldn't grab a gun, lead a pheasant hunt, and not be able to load my own gun, which I made for myself.
Come on, John Kerry.
Right. Come on. Come on. You kidding? But this guy's supposed to be legitimate from Nebraska. So he does this. Now we should just put her behind the – go ahead.
Show me what you did.
I was a Bennigan's, right? A now defunct franchise, right?
Yes.
Like it's going the way of Fridays is now. And I could tell you – I could go wait on tables right now. I could go up to the computer and see all the names, memorize them. You'd be so impressed with me as a waiter. If she really worked at McDonald's, she could walk right in and nothing's changed. Still hamburgers and fries.
Yeah, they have the same menu. Look, I worked at the General Cinema Corporation, ripping tickets, pop. I could go up and work that popcorn machine, guaranteed.
Right away, right?
Yes.
Would you close? Can you close? Clean up and close?
Yes, I could clean up. I could close.
Thank you.
And I know who my boss was,
right.
Mr. Hobie.
Right. And do you know anybody you work with?
Yes, Mr. Hobie. He was my boss.
Do you have any friends there? Do you have any names?
No.
You don't remember any names?
I was a 15-year-old geek. I don't know what their names are.
I just don't remember.
I know who my boss was, Mr. Hobie.
Mr. Hobie. Does he have a first name? Oh, that was out of respect.
For me, he was Mr. Hobie.
Yeah, I'm still with the Mr. thing. Do your friends call you by your first name? Do your kids' friends? Oh, your friends. Do your kids' friends call you by your first name?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Do you like that?
Once I'm comfortable with them, but not if they were dating my kids.
Right. Hey, Jason. Yeah.
We're not peers.
Right.
We're not peers.
Oh, are your kids married?
They're all married now.
Right. So they're not dating.
They should better not be.
Should you qualify that?
I have six grandkids, Brian.
Wow.
Six.
It's amazing how young. You got a head start. You're going to have like great grandkids and still be in your 60s.
You know I'm from Utah, right?
I heard. Hey, listen, I got much more to discuss, including this Nikki Haley situation, because I brought it up with the president on Friday of last week. And now the question is, if this is such a tight election, why would you leave any Nikki Haley voter out to not vote or vote for somebody else? I thought I brought that up. I think something might be coming down with this, Jason. I want to get your take. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Let me just tell you, Nikki Haley and I fought, and I beat her by 50, 60, 90 points. I beat her in her own state by numbers that nobody's ever been beaten by. I beat Nikki badly. I beat everyone else, too, badly. I set records, both in speed and in the magnitude of the win. And everybody keeps saying that. They don't say get Ron, and Ron did very well. But again, I beat everybody by numbers that have never happened before.
So I asked him a question, was it time to get Nikki Haley and just like get everyone on the same page? And also, he's really strong with guys. He's not as strong with women as last time. So I brought it up. And now there seems to be movement on both sides to do something jointly together, but there's mutual distrust. Congressman Chaffetz, you know both parties.
Right.
Should there be a reason to be worried if you're the Trump camp, if you go in an unscripted situation, town hall, that maybe she'll say negative things about you, take subtle jabs?
I don't see any reason why Nikki Haley, the governor, she would I can't imagine that she'd do something stupid and unscripted like this. Her brand is such that she says, hey, I'm steady, I'm reliable, I'm a conservative, I'm a Republican, and there's no way I'm voting and supporting for Kamala Harris. She has issues with Donald Trump, but I think that's part of a campaign. I think she can be the grown-up in the room. If she wants to have a political future in any way, shape, or form, she's going to get behind Donald Trump as the commander-in-chief. And 4 years from now, she can be a viable candidate once again. And I think that's going to happen. And I do think it's accretive to what Donald Trump is trying to accomplish. I think there is that faction, albeit small, of Nikki Haley people that maybe hesitate on Donald Trump, but with a good endorsement, full-throttled, hey, we got to get this guy elected, would make a difference for a lot of people.
So I think you can trust her. Because you mentioned it's reliable, yeah. Because she wants to be president.
Yeah.
And there's no sense of alienating any portion of the Republican Party. Whether Trump wins or not, he's done in 4 years. He's done in either 1 month or 4 years. So why even risk it? Why risk going out there in Iowa and going, well, you don't like Trump? No, excuse me. I went in the time they needed me most, went called, did a huge town hall. You saw me out there. Wherever the country is in 4 years, it doesn't do you any good to alienate yourself. Adam Kinzinger felt the same thing. Liz Cheney made her choice. We watch Ambassador Bolton pretend to have to defend the foreign policy of Joe Biden. Come on. Think big picture.
Yeah. No, I look, at this point, it's a binary choice between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. One of those two will be the next president of the United States. And you compare them side by side and then you make the case and say, yeah, I disagree with them. That's called campaigning. That's called America. That's what democracy is all about. You fight for what you believe in. If you lose and Donald Trump won big by some of the biggest margins ever, then you get behind the candidate who you support the most. And that clearly is Donald Trump.
Does it astound you that people look back at 2016 analytically and say, well, Trump won that and he died? They would not say that for 4 years. Anytime you brought up, they won Pennsylvania, they won Ohio, they won Wisconsin and they won Michigan. That was Russians. What do you mean it's Russians? Yeah, Facebook ads are proving it. They're looking into it, the dossier. So for 4 years, just muddied the waters. You can't even analyze an election. They said, well, and then Hillary Clinton. Everybody knows, Donald knows he's an illegitimate president.
Right.
For 4 years. Now they look back and they say, well, that was an aberration. 2020, Joe Biden wins. And then they want to marginalize him and say, he'll never get the nomination. We're going to put him through lawfare and take away his wealth. The lawfare didn't work. The wealth is still there. And he reestablished the wall. And if nothing yet, everything they said about 2016 being a fluke has been disproven.
Everything that they told us and used the excuses turned out to be fundamentally not true. The reality is the country did not want to elect Hillary Clinton the president of the United States, thought she would be radical. She was over the top and somebody that nobody wanted to see as president, at least as the majority of the electoral votes that just didn't want it to happen. She'd say, oh, I won the popular vote. Well, congratulations. You won a lot of people in California and New York. But that is not what happened. They never understood or took time to understand Donald Trump and his appeal.
Exit question. What do you think happens November 7th?
Oh, I think November Donald 5th. Trump's going to win and win convincingly.
I know you want that, but do you think that?
I really do. It feels like it right now.
All right, Congressman Jason Chaffetz, we'll see you when outnumbered. You'll be the man in the middle. Adam Bowler's next, Inside the Developments in Israel.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I don't have any direct knowledge, but I know they're serious about hitting back. I think it will be soon. I think it will be a hard hit. But again, the more you can diminish Iran, Hezbollah, and Hamas, better for the region. I think a normalization deal between Saudi Arabia and Israel, which is the key, is more possible than ever.
But to do it after you hit Iran and minimize it, and you got to get done with the Hezbollah-Hamas conflicts first, Israel has strengthened their hand by ignoring us, by ignoring the urgency for a premature ceasefire, by ignoring the outrage for people who said, you better not go into Rafah. They delayed, but they went in anyway. That's where they got Sinwar, the bin Laden of this whole operation, as evil could be. And Lindsey Graham's talking about this historic hit back Israel have after they sent 180 rockets, Iran did, into Israel 3 weeks ago. What could be next? We know this. documents have leaked from the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, our agency, two leaked reports prepared last week by that other agency, which analyzes imagery gathered by American reconnaissance satellites and other intelligence. That leaked, and it helps give an insight, some say, into where Israel will hit. Joining us now is Adam Bowler, founder and CEO of Rubicon Founders, and one of the key architects of the Abraham Accords, a negotiator also with the Taliban to try to bring peace to that country, but it did not work out when he was gone. Adam Bowler, welcome back. Adam, first off, could you put in perspective, I can't quite figure out with these leaks how this happened, but the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, very valuable satellite material that people would like to look at before they bombed another country, correct?
Yes, that's what they do. And I will tell you, these leaks happen. And typically when you work in Washington, the way that you express when you don't like a commander or when you don't like how people are approaching an issue, that is a route that people can take. It's a horrible route when you're talking about classified information. But my guess here, I mean, it's just a guess, is you have somebody that sympathizes with Iran. Maybe they worked on what happened before when we were coming close, and they're not happy that this fight is happening. Or Israel. But, you know, so that is an explanation that may be somebody that sympathizes.
Well, I mean, we know the attack is coming. We also know that what Israel has done with the IDF has been historic and consequential and strengthened their hand substantially. Now, could you talk about the blowing up of financial institutions who are doing the banking for Hezbollah, just blowing up these banks? What does that do?
I mean, it just completely takes away the money and the ability for Hezbollah to rebuild. And so when you destroy those institutions, those banks, I mean, everybody works off money. It's funny, you know, you think about terrorists or others, they may have different motives than us, but they are very money prone because it's what operates them. So you see Israel deciding that we want to almost completely disable them and hurt them back.
Here's what Dan Hoffman said about the leak, and then we'll move on. Cut 42. Dan Hoffman, sure. You know, worked for the CIA and was in the Moscow Bureau as well as Iraq. Cut 42.
The intelligence itself is probably not going to have a significant impact on how effective Israel's counterstrike on Iran will be. But there is concern about the fact that the United States Geospatial Agency, Intelligence Agency, was tracking, using our satellites, to track Israeli military movements. So that's intelligence collection on our ally. And the fact that it was leaked is obviously something that the FBI, in conjunction with the U.S. military, will need to be investigating. They'll do the forensics to determine who might have leaked this intelligence.
So they think they were spying on the Israelis because the Israelis stopped informing us of what they were going to do ahead of time because they couldn't trust us. Almost everything ended up in the Washington Post.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I'll say there, in fairness to us, actually, is that we spy on everybody, and Israel probably spies on us. I think it's kind of in government, it's kind of a given that happens. So I don't mind the spying as much. What I do mind is you have somebody leaking that information, and that's a huge issue, and I want to know who and what their motives are. I am worried they're a little bit more senior than, you know, sometimes we see these leaks and they're junior people.
Yeah.
I am worried you have somebody much more senior that was hoping we were coming back in Iran, but we'll see.
They have a huge affinity with Iran. Everyone says has different hunches. I can deal with this country. I can't. This administration and the previous Democratic administration really feels that they're one meeting away from breaking through with Iran. And they know if Israel does the type of damage they're capable of, that might get rid of that forever, and we might be forced into something perhaps. That's the only thing I could think of.
You know, the administration, I think, has two things. Because I've studied this a little bit, because it's real. You've got to ask, why Iran? Why start a discussion? It's not it's not a geopolitically strong country. Its economy isn't big. Like, I can tell you, there's great reasons to reproach to Saudi Arabia, right? They're growing.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of dollars, right? Why Iran? And I think there's two reasons, and one is really old. They feel responsibility somehow for when the Shah was overthrown and felt like we should have been there and felt like the United States made moves. So this is real old stuff that they feel, some people feel. And then the second is it was a signature Obama thing to be able to bring them together on the nuclear side. And they want to go back to them to a glory phase. It was always a mistake. Bibi said it was a mistake right then. I went all the way and addressed Congress on it. But for them, it was a crowning achievement.
So let's think about this, Adam. You had Bibi Netanyahu with having people protest his existence. They said he's an unpopular prime minister. It sacrificed a lot to put together a government to get power back. And then does that happen? The brutal attacks happened on his watch. And now he has the world sentiment turning against him, saying they're not being surgical enough with their attacks on Gaza and too many innocent people are dying. And you better not go into Rafah. And he just ignores everybody. And then he just starts taking out Hezbollah systematically by the thousands, killing almost every leader. And then Sinwar on Friday. Now that he's done this, in defiance of our urgent not to do it, where does he stand right now? Like, what if you're the... If you're Bibi Netanyahu, what is your next step?
From the perspective of working with the United States or relations with the United States, or from the perspective of
from just his perspective, from his perspective, knowing that his country is not secure, they legitimately have multiple enemies who want to destroy them, and they have a portion of their country that's uninhabitable because of Hezbollah.
He has two goals. He had four goals, and he has two left. He needed to take out what was happening in southern Lebanon and weaken Hezbollah so that people could move back to their houses. He needed to take out Sinwar. Now he needs to get the hostages home, and he needs to take out the strike capability of Iran, nuclear strike capability of Iran. That's it. Then he wins.
And then we'll see what happens. Sinwar dead. He was the major impediment to getting the hostages out. If I told Adam Bowler, use your negotiating skill to try to get them out now, where do you start? Do you go to Qatar, where some of the Hamas political wing is?
You dual track it. The reason that Sinwar was out there and was up was because Israel has realized more and more over time through a variety of means how the tunnels work, where people are in the tunnels. And they started to go because of certain strategic areas and the tunnels that are bigger, where they place hostages and where Sinwar was. So Sinwar, while it was luck that got him above ground, what wasn't luck is the fact that he had to keep going above ground. That was because Israel was getting really, really close and flushing him out. So I think in a situation like this, you negotiate, but you don't stop. And I think there's, you know, you're either going to flush them out from the tunnels or I think a ceasefire negotiation actually is possible now that Sinwar is gone. I don't think I wouldn't put it in the 100% category, but I think it opens up a whole bunch of possibilities on the diplomatic front that were not there when Sinwar was there.
So one of the people with a bounty on his head that threatened his life is Brian Hook, because he was involved in Soleimani's death, they believe, just like the former Secretary of State and President Trump. Here's what Brian Hook said about what should be next and also the policy that we're witnessing. Cut 41.
President Trump put in place a policy for the Middle East that not only destroyed ISIS and ended a war, but then also we did four peace treaties in 5 months, thanks to President Trump and Jared Kushner. That diplomacy was terrific diplomacy, and President Biden came into office, inherited the best possible hand that any president in living memory has inherited in the Middle East, and he completely squandered it by trying to reach some sort of understanding with the Iranian regime by getting back into the Iran nuclear deal. And he alienated Israel, and he alienated our Sunni partners. Iran has enjoyed a $100 billion financial windfall because the Biden administration refuses to enforce Trump's oil sanctions. And that is the driver of instability and violence in today's Middle East.
Can you challenge anything he said?
No, mainly because I love Brian. I served with him. And when we did the Abraham Accords, there were four of us. Jared, a guy named Avi, Brian Hook, and me. And Brian's foreign policy is exactly what it should be, which is we have the – never forgetting that we are the United States of America, and that there's responsibility there, but there's also the ability to strike and take back. And our the current – it's why the reason that Bibi doesn't listen when we say – when Biden says, you know, ceasefire, almost it's – you know, it's a little bit like with Biden that, you know, his mental health issues have increased, and it's the only word he says. He says it like in the middle of the Sinwar sentence too. It's just ceasefire all the time. It's like a nagging mom. But at the end of the day, this has been empowered by U.S. actions. And it started Russia. The Russia incursion started through Afghanistan. It started through our weakness there for the disaster. We never would have left it like that. Now to Putin seeing the weakness, to him attacking, and now you've got all these, you know, openings that weren't there before. And so there's a way to end this. I mean, if there's a change in administration party in the election going up, we will very quickly end this. Because I will tell you, if the United States supports, and I don't mean just rah-rah them like some people do in the administration or say they rah-rah after something good happens. If the United States supports Israel, there will be no more Iran nuclear capability.
I hear
you. There doesn't have to be a deal.
Lastly, North Koreans fighting on the ground with the Russians against Ukraine. This, to me, has been a report. I saw this 3 weeks ago. I said, why is this not a bigger deal? Now, over the weekend, it's getting some traction. North Korea coming over, not only with armaments and artillery, but now with people on the ground. Is this, I mean, North Koreans kind of stand out, Adam. I mean, you can't even say, well, wait a second, they could be Eastern Europeans, they're Belarusians, we can't tell. North Koreans look a little different. Doesn't this change everything? Is this becoming a world war?
I don't. It's still selective in geography. I'm just laughing because North Koreans have been training so much for a long time. At some point, you know, maybe it's just about getting real battle practice. By the way, this is what happens when the United States is distracted
on
something else. These other things happen, but that's funny.
Well, it's a whole lot of people going to be fighting. It makes it tougher for Ukraine to wear them down. Adam Bowler, thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, Brian.
He'll be finding out shortly whether he's going to be called back into government soon. And if he'll answer that call, he's already done enough. 1-866-408-7669. I know you have a lot to say, especially over the weekend. We got 15 days left. Where do you think the race is now? Go over some polls. Brian Kilmeade Show.
The fastest growing talk show in America. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I will be leading the effort to make sure that we do not provide more offensive military aid to Israel. But to those people who are saying, well, I can't support Harris because she disagrees, Trump on that issue, even on that issue, is worse. He will be closer to Netanyahu. So if we are able to elect Harris, I think we're going to have an opportunity to move her on that issue, to make it clear we cannot allow children in Gaza to starve to death. She will be open to that. I doubt that Trump will. We can't even get Republican support in the Senate for humanitarian aid to feed starving children. You really want to vote for a Trump who holds that view? I would hope not.
So Sanders is saying, I want to get her elected, and then I'm going to push her my socialist direction. Do you feel better about what Kamala Harris will do? Do you feel better about her flip-flop when it comes to policy? Do you believe that she knows a wink and a nod she's going to be exactly like Bernie when she gets the power? I do. Jim, WLAD in Connecticut. Hey, Jim.
Hey, good morning. It's just fascinating to me as a longtime Democrat, proud liberal, Bernie Sanders voter, to find myself on the same page as Liz Cheney and Dick Cheney and any number of Republicans. The bottom line is, on January 6th, Donald Trump aimed a well-armed mob at the Capitol and did nothing
for hours as they beat the crap out of Trump.
So, Jim, you were fine with him up until January 6th?
Oh, no, there's all kinds of problems with Trump. Okay. But, yeah, the bottom line is he is a threat to democracy, and I hope he's defeated.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't see he's a threat at all. In fact, when they attacked him in 2016 and told me he was illegitimate, they launched the Russia investigations. He's already been fined for doing it. They launched the phony dossier. She paid for it through campaign funds, which is illegal. And then for 2.5 years, costing us millions of dollars and sacrificing our relationship with anyone in Eastern Europe that might have been allied with Russia, at the same time hurting relationship with other nations. That, to me, was the beginning of a loss of sanity as it relates to Trump. Now, on January 6th, the same thing. I thought January 6th, if you even heard me with Pete Hegseth, Pete Hegseth was reporting the day they had the rally. And I go, Pete, where are these guys going? I go, they're going to the Capitol. This is as we're signing off the air. I go, why are they doing that? That can't be good. What are they doing in the Capitol? When you hit a cop, I have no patience for you. I don't care what happens to you. I'm never going to make excuses for it. Those people wasn't a day of love. When they showed up to support Trump, yeah, that you could say, oh, they liked the guy. But when they went to the Capitol and started breaking things and going through and beating up cops, absolutely. But you look at that along the way, he did call for National Guard. They did thought there was a potential for violence. He could have done more. But to me, that's one incident, one day. And the fact that every Sunday show and every network anchor, every reporter brings it up in every report, it has diminished what it's meant. And it's also they're trying to overwhelm what he did, which was a lot of good stuff, as opposed to what we're witnessing now with a vice president that just ousted her president in order to get a nomination. Brian Kilmeade Show.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moment of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, just blocks away from the new Venezuelan gang is making home on 42nd Street. Michael Goodwin standing by with the New York Post. He knows all about it. He also talked about the impact of Sinwar's death in the Middle East and Congressman Michael Waltz, brand new book out. You know, he's a former Green Beret. As his book, Hard Truths, Think and Lead Like a Green Beret. Michael Waltz will be with us shortly. He's a good friend of the show, too. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The danger to this country is the policies of Biden and Harris. Her fingerprints are all over this disaster, and I can't take 4 more years of this crap.
Any guy can hear it in your voice, Senator. Israel has strengthened their hand by ignoring Harris and Biden and taking out their terror enemies, now blowing up Hezbollah terror institutions and what remains of Hamas. Next up, Iran. But a leak could change all those plans.
Number two.
Nikki is in. Nikki is helping us already. But people keep saying, when are you bringing? They don't say, when are you bringing this one? Or that. Everybody is in, and Nikki is already in. You know, she's out campaigning.
Donald Trump, a little reluctant to get Nikki actually in, reaching across. Final weeks, and Trump reaches out to Haley. And Harris campaigns with Liz Cheney. Will this deliver the voters that could flip a razor-thin election in the 7 battleground states? It wouldn't hurt.
Number one.
This is a real acceleration for Trump. I always warn people as a pollster, anything can happen in 3 weeks. And I wonder what could happen that's external that could change things, because certainly the pandemic, although much further out, that changed 2020. So anything can happen.
Matt Towery, the pollster, weighing in 15 days to go as both campaigns pan their opponents in the darkest manner possible. But only Trump is called out for it. Typical. He will discuss that sprint to victory. Michael Goodwin, you might have noticed they keep saying Trump is talking darker and more sinister. Kamala Harris has given up talking about any policy. All she talks about is we're tired of Donald Trump and how mean he is and brings people down.
Yeah, good morning, Brian. And, of course, the media echoes that. So she gets a kind of two-for-one bite every time she says something. Look, I think Trump's appearance yesterday as at McDonald's, as you've noted, was a brilliant stroke. Before that, he had went to a barber shop in the Bronx. I think these are the kinds of things that are the antidote to the idea that he's a mean and horrible person. When you get sort of the testimonials of the people whom the Democrats are trying to reach also, or who are presumed to be Democratic constituents, when they show up for Trump, when they welcome him, when he is seen in their environment, I think that's a very good antidote to the fear campaign that they're running. Because when you scrape away that fear, what's left? What policy has Kamala Harris put out there that's attracting voters? To me, it's a mystery that, her campaign is so thin. And I think from here on out, it's just going to be hate Trump, hate Trump, hate Trump. I don't believe that will be enough if people actually vote. If enough people vote, I think people will want someone who's offering something positive for the future, not just negative. And that's why I think Trump also is susceptible with his name-calling and things. I think that's a negative note, and he ought to steer clear of that as much as possible.
So I think this is hysterical. While you're talking, MSNBC has Donald Trump at McDonald's. You know what it says on the bottom? Trump dodges minimum wage conversation at McDonald's trip. Are you insane? Are you insane? You're missing the point. How about saying, by the way, she never worked there. Nobody knows that she ever worked there. No manager ever managed her. No outlet has ever housed her. Nobody remembers a part of her biography where she worked at McDonald's.
Right. You know, it must be quite a job to sit at, say, MSNBC or the New York Times and say, well, okay, what's the story today? Well, Trump did this thing at McDonald's. Okay, what can we find that's wrong with it? How can we go against it? Oh, right, he's attacking her over not working there. Oh, look, he's wearing a tie. Isn't it stupid to wear a tie? How, you know, I mean, you just have to look and look and look and try to find something to ruin the party. You can't just admit it was a stroke. I mean, I have to say that picture of him, you know, looking out the drive-through window with the tie and the apron on. I mean, it's a classic photo. It, whatever happens in this election, that photo I think will live in presidential history.
So I want you to hear, they just can't figure out why he's still popular. The January 6th probe, the lawfare, the bankrupting and the civil suit. Now he wins the primary, and now he surges even after you got the 60-year-old nominee instead of the 82-year-old. Here is Martha Raddatz. Listen to this desperation in her voice. This is to Governor Shapiro. Cut 8.
When you think about Donald Trump and his appeal to all of your voters in your states, to half of the voters in the states, what do you think the appeal is of Donald Trump? What do you think they'd like about him?
I think there's a lot of folks who are frustrated that they don't see government solving problems in their communities. I think what people are craving are leaders who know how to get stuff done for them.
And then he went on to say he doesn't, but he did. That's why people want him back. But what is your take from that exchange?
Well, look, to go down that road, first of all, for the media, I mean, I'm reminded of the great line from 2016 the media takes Trump literally but not seriously. His supporters take him seriously but not literally. And I think Martha Raddatz, her problem, along with the media, they take Trump literally. But they don't don't understand the connection that he builds with the working class. And I have to say, Brian, it remains something of a mystery. Here is is a man who can, I think, reasonably be described as a billionaire Manhattan playboy at various parts of his life, who has found a way to talk to the working class, many of whom feel forgotten by both parties. He speaks to them in ways that resonate, and they have stuck with him now for 9 years. I mean, it is a remarkable phenomenon. He has a gift, and the Democrats simply don't want to admit it. First they say, oh, he's a liar, blah, blah, blah. And then they say his supporters are being duped, or they're stupid, they're evil, they're far right. I mean, they cannot just accept that he has found a way to talk to the voters that used to support them. And the media, it boggles my mind that they have not tried harder to understand what this connection is. Because if they had, it would have forced the Democrats to talk to those people too. Instead, the media and the Democrats demonized both Trump and his supporters. And that is their great failing.
It is. I also want to talk about what's happening with Israel and Sinwar's death. We're getting video now from these tunnels. He was forced out of the tunnels because Israel was being so aggressive. Began to finish it out. They killed him in Rafah, a place that that Biden told him and Vice President Harris said, don't go into Rafah. It'll be a humanitarian disaster. They found him and killed him in Rafah. This guy is evil personified. They're finding video, and what they found is the guy had a ton of cash. His wife, yes, wife, had a $32,000 bag in some of this video that was just exposed. He had UNRWA, which is a UN organization, ID in his pocket. He had mentors, that candy that was given out by the UN. And this guy was using the cash to get rich that belonged to the Palestinian people, who any clear-thinking person would see them as being used as sacrificial lambs to the IDF attack. What's your takeaway from his death?
Well, look, I think that, I mean, all that being true, I think for people in this country, the takeaway is that Joe Biden failed. When he and Harris told Prime Minister Netanyahu, do not go into Rafah. They made all kinds of threats, genocide, blah, blah, blah. They really would have protected Sinwar. Sinwar would be alive today and still in control of what's left of the Gaza brigades had Netanyahu listened to them. Instead, he did what was best for Israel, not what was best for the Harris-Biden campaign, but what was best for Israel's security. And he went after the brain trust. He went after the leaders. He's going after, as you say, in Lebanon, the institutions that support this terrorist regime in Gaza and in southern Lebanon and ultimately in Iran. And I think it is, Brian, if you look back, say, 5 weeks, before the end of Gaza, right when the Israelis were going after Hezbollah for the first time, when the pagers exploded, and what happened after that, taking out the leaders of Hezbollah, Nasrallah, one at a time they climbed the ladder until they got the leader. What Israel has done is a modern example of warfare that is unrelenting, that is not going to spare a single hair on the head of the enemy because of what they did on October 7th and because of what they would do again and again and again, as they promised, if given the chance. Israel is fighting for its life. And it is shameful that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and Tony Blinken and Jake Sullivan and other elements in the American government are trying to hold them back to keep the game going, to keep their game going politically, but also to give a break to the savage beasts who did these things. I think Israel is going to keep going, and I don't know how it's going to end, but I do believe that we have not yet seen the big moment of their attack on Iran.
Here is what Lindsey Graham said, cut 40.
I don't have any direct knowledge, but I know they're serious about hitting back. I think it will be soon. I think it will be a hard hit. But again, the more you can diminish Iran, Hezbollah, and Hamas, better for the region. I think a normalization deal between Saudi Arabia and Israel, which is the key, is more possible than ever.
Yeah, because Iran's got to be neutralized. And we have to show that we're willing to do it. And yet we're waiting for this attack. But there were all types of leaks of geospatial satellite images that might have indicated to Iran where Israel plans on hitting and the vulnerabilities in which they have. I have no idea who is behind it, but it's certainly intriguing.
Brian, I agree with you. I have no idea either, but I would say it's a political leak. It is done for political purposes. It is done to stop Israel, to make it more difficult for the Israelis to say, oops, we can't do it because Iran knows what's coming. I think that's why it was done. And I think it's shameful. I think it's coming from within the administration. It may be a deep state maneuver in coordination with the administration. But I think it is disgraceful the way Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have sold out our great ally. And Israel is more than an ally. Israel is a moral cause. And for them to not understand this, I think it just reflects their weakness about terrorism. They are lousy leaders. They are afraid. They are fearful of the worst-case scenario. And so they kind of sleepwalk into these situations where the enemy is emboldened. I mean, it is appeasement, and it's a dirty word, but there's no other way to describe what they have done in Russia, what they do with China, and now what they do in the Mideast. I mean, they are terrible, terrible leaders.
The worst foreign policy of my lifetime, there's just no question. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. Read his column on foxnews.com, NY Post. MGoodwin_NY Post. The new column is Sinwar's death is a lesson to the left. The war has its consequences. Michael, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
All right, we come back. A few minutes of your calls, then we welcome in the great Congressman Michael Waltz. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The election is just 16 days away, and the candidates are striking very different tones trying to get out the vote. For example, here's Kamala Harris.
Your vote is your voice, and your voice is your power.
Nice. And here's Trump.
Get that fat pig off the couch. Tell him to go and vote for Trump. He's going to save our country.
Also nice. Direct.
So everyone's got different methods. I mean, in context, Pete, did you know the context of that?
No, actually, I didn't, which I'm glad
that was the
I
first
did,
time I heard that.
It made the laughter more genuine here back over here.
Muggsy, you're in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Muggsy.
Hey, Brian, super quick. I just want to give a little input, which is totally factual based on me. I'm in my 60s. My son is a millennial. He's in his late 30s. He definitely worked at McDonald's. I could vouch for that. I know that in so many ways. But anyway, when he got his first job after graduating from college, they could not verify his employment. So take that with a grain of salt. So
well, keep in mind,
That's
keep in mind.
That,
so here's what the thing is. Does he know where he worked? Does he remember?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Does he know the manager's name? Does he know anybody there? Does he remember anybody in there? Does he remember his shift work? Does he have his uniform? Does he have a hat? Can he remember the day he walked in? Can he remember the training? Can he remember what he did?
Well, he was 16. It was his very first. Actually, he was 15.
All right.
It was right after he got a
fantastic
work permit. He played football
exactly
in high school.
And he probably remembers people he worked with. When I got a job at 16, I could remember exactly what I was doing. I could remember about a handful of people I worked with. I could tell you the address. She can't tell you the address.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly where he worked because I dropped him off.
Thank you.
Because, yeah, okay.
That's what I'm saying. Bye. I don't need to see our corporate. Just say, I worked in that building. That's when I worked at. And the thing is, she's running from the story now. So that's what Trump's doing. He's like, not only do I like McDonald's, not only do a lot of my voters work at McDonald's and go to McDonald's, I'm going to do something that she claims to have done. I'm going to actually work there. So no one's bringing that up because they just want to say, well, Trump's at McDonald's. And know what they were saying? He's not talking about minimum wage. Not talking about minimum wage.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean,
go get him, Muggsy. Thanks so much for the call over in Daytona. Look, when I come back, we'll talk about all this. We'll talk about the election. We've got to talk about what's happening in Ukraine. North Koreans are showing up in Russia to fight for the Russians against the Ukrainians. So they got to deal with a population of 150 million as opposed to 40 million. Now they got to deal with North Koreans being brought in as mercenaries to fight with the Russians. I mean, should we send in South Koreans? I mean, what's going on here? You're worried about expanding this war, making it bigger, and they're bringing somebody in, an army in from another peninsula? Many of which are defecting because their country is so terrible, by the way. Congressman Michael Walters left. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
When presidents disengage, they tend to lose control. Trump never lost control. He was always in control. And look, we're talking about right now Israel and killing of Sinwar. You know, when you go back and just look at the personalities involved, President Trump today said he already talked to Netanyahu. President Biden talked to Netanyahu twice in the last 50 days. Kamala Harris hasn't. In fact, she basically stiffed him when he came back here and talked to a joint session of Congress. She wasn't even there. That shows what they think of Netanyahu. This is a leader who is fighting an existential fight for his country, fighting in multiple directions against Hamas, against Hezbollah, against the Houthis, against Iran, and they give him lip service. Trump would never do that.
That, of course, is General Kellogg. He'll probably play a role if Trump wins, former Trump National Security Advisor to Pence and Trump. But just talking about the fact that Netanyahu feels totally comfortable calling Trump. Look, Netanyahu's doing his own thing. He's totally defied this administration and had success doing it to the point where he now has leverage over them. Now this whole leak with this geospatial release of this of the satellite images of possible terror targets in Iran is problematic. And I can't really get my head around who would do it. Congressman Michael Waltz is here. He's on Armed Services Intelligence and Foreign Affairs, author of a brand new book out tomorrow called Hard Truths, Think and Lead Like a Green Beret. Congressman, welcome back. And you're holding it up for the stream. There you go.
There we go for the stream. Yeah, so, great to be with you, Brian.
So your thoughts about
which
the president coming out talking to Bibi over the weekend, where this president, current president, doesn't really talk to him. Remember, they're not even in conversation.
No, they actually went a couple of months without talking to him until very recently. So this is as we have ballistic missiles flying, cruise missiles flying.
Yep.
We have multiple attacks that's not getting covered at all that's ongoing on our ships in the Red Sea. Talk about inflation, 80% roughly of shipping now has to go all the way around Africa, ballooning cost and global shipping. Another thing that's not being talked about is Egypt gets a huge portion of its revenue from fees going through the Suez Canal. That's starting to destabilize. All of this is Iran, 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 Iran. And yet this administration, as Iran is actively, Brian, I'm also on the assassination task force looking into what happened to President Trump. Iran is actively trying to kill him. And this administration is basically shoulder shrugging.
So Biden says, well, we look at that as an act of war if you target one of
finally.
Our leaders.
By the way, they've been trying to kill him and his cabinet officers like Pompeo,
Brian Hook.
Brian Hook and others for 3 years. And Biden just now sends a private message, which they leak from the NSC, instead of being presidential, being a commander in chief, going to the podium
Absolutely.
And saying, hey, Iran, here's the consequences. Regardless of political party, you start assassinating Americans, here's what's going to happen to you.
And you know who did that? Bill Clinton, when they found out Saddam had an assassination squad go after Bush 41.
That's right.
So
that's right.
To me, it seems like, of course, it's the right thing to do. By the way,
they're so wedded. We have to ask ourselves, they are so wedded to this Iran appeasement strategy. I think because at very senior levels, they've been infiltrated. Their lead negotiator, Rob Malley, we can't get a straight answer on why, on the one hand, the FBI took his security clearance for something he was doing with the Iranians. The press reporting is that he was sharing information, but yet the State Department's IG report just came out and said he still had access to the negotiations. His lieutenants are sprinkled around the Pentagon and elsewhere. And look, Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, and Blinken were the same people that were around Obama. They are so wedded to this fiction of an Iran deal that they just can't see what's going on around them.
Right. So we have the THAAD missile system about to be deployed. How long does it take, do you know, Congressman, the THAAD system to be put into place where it can be effective?
It can be done relatively quickly once they get
the go. Right?
I don't want to give the exact exact timeline.
But it's not that complex.
But it's six launchers. The radars, you have to get calibrated. That takes a bit of time.
Just threw my iPad across the room.
Well, that's how mad you are about better
guys getting
shot
at. I got my THAAD missile system.
Yeah.
But
we only have seven of them. And so this is a strategic system. On the Armed Services Committee, we've been kind of pounding the table. Why don't we have more and more Patriots, which shoot down missiles at a lower range, at a shorter range?
And this
range
has been the case for 3 years since the Ukrainian attack.
Yeah.
And since Taiwan has ordered to ask for it, have we been able to
Taiwan's
fulfill?
Been begging for them. We've had one deployed to South Korea. They need one there because of what the North Koreans are doing. We have been slow to counter the missile defense in terms of employing missile defense systems, both strategically and tactically, and counter drone. Incredibly, incredibly slow. And if you remember what happened under the Obama administration, they said this thing is kind of a boondoggle. We don't need it. And they actually canceled the radars in Eastern Europe because, back to remember the debate with Romney, that stuff is old. What happened to the Cold War? That stuff is old thinking. Russia's
right.
Not a problem.
The 1980s called. They want
their
foreign
policy
back.
They want their 1980s back. Yeah.
They want the foreign policy back. So we have this situation where Iran is waiting to be hit back again. And then you have Sinwar dead. And now yesterday they blew up the financial institutions inside Lebanon that Hezbollah does their banking in.
Yeah, right. I mean, let's go to the core of the problem. It's not just Hezbollah does their banking. This is where Iran facilitates its financial support of Hezbollah. Brian, just a few years ago, we had reporting Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Houthis were all openly complaining and privately complaining they were out of cash. They couldn't pay their fighters. They couldn't buy ammunition because Maximum Pressure had the Iranians on their back foot economically. Their currency was tanking. Their foreign reserves were basically down to zero. They couldn't export oil. And the regime was completely on its back foot. And their proxies were saying, we can't fight for you. We don't have your money.
So what if the Russians decide to sign a mutual defense pact with Iran? What if they decide to put their missile defense system into Iran? We have a window of opportunity where that's not a factor. But if they decide to do that because Iran has given them so much for their war in Ukraine, what are we doing about it?
Well, they have flirted with putting the S-400, their most advanced missile system, over time. Iran's already providing both drones and ballistic missiles to Russia to go to Iran. Look, at the end of the day, it's cut off the cash. And if what we should be doing about it is flooding global markets with clean American oil and gas. You drive down the prices below which Iran or Russia can make money, and you drive
the
war machine.
You think Trump would be willing to do that?
Absolutely, though. That's central to a strategy. Not only do you solve a lot of our inflation problem, you solve a lot of our geopolitical problem as well.
So tell me about your military background and how it led to this book.
Well, I'm served 27 years as a Green Beret. I get asked all the time, what are the differences in Green Berets, Navy SEALs, and Rangers? The SEALs and the Rangers, best in the world at putting two bullets in a forehead, middle of the night, other side of the world, like they did Osama bin Laden. We can do that too, but we learn multiple languages, local cultures. You take a half dozen of us and embed us with a local tribe, a militia, a village. And we'll train thousands of them to do our nation's bidding for us, by, with, and through. We embed with our local indigenous forces, specialize in guerrilla warfare. And what I talk about in the book are the attributes you need to be successful. We're often alone, very afraid sometimes. These warlords would soon kill us as they would the bad guys. And I talk about building those coalitions in Africa and Afghanistan. If we can do it there, then I can do it in the swamp. And how I've applied those attributes now to this, although sometimes, Brian, I think the swamp, the tribes in the swamp are a little bit tougher than the tribes in Africa.
Certainly
and
harder to move and find.
Yeah, that's right.
Hard truth, same of the book, Think and Lead Like a Green Beret. Michael Waltz is here to talk about it. So when people are talking about out of Washington, have no interest in politics, they could benefit from this?
Look, I talk about how I've applied these attributes to being a CEO, how I've applied them to life, building a business with a wonderful family. And then, but then also in this national political conversation, you know, when you're talking about discipline, resilience, what you need in terms of building coalitions, empathy, loyalty, bottoms up leadership, those are things that can make – if it can make a Green Beret successful on the other side of the world. Not everybody goes through special forces and ranger training and survival, escape, and evasion training. But read this, and you can apply them to life. And by the way, before I forget, none of the royalties, nothing's coming to me. It's going to veterans charities for the guys that I lost.
So, Congressman, give me an idea of how you took when you wore that suit as opposed to your uniform, how you use those principles to help you in the House.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I talk about, you know, everything in politics now is if you're hit, hit back harder, just automatic reaction. I talk about restraint in one of the chapters. We were being mortared. One of my snipers saw a little boy, a 10-year-old little boy. Every time he brought up the cell phone, another round dropped on us. Sniper asked for permission to take him out. I said no. I thought about my own kids. I thought about the impact on that tribe. We fired a warning shot. Thankfully, the boy ran into his village. Turned out the Taliban had lined up every family, said, give us your oldest son to go fight the Americans or else. One family refused, and they hung their 7-year-old little boy. Restraint was the right option then, right? In politics, I was accused of stolen valor in my first campaign. I wanted to hit back and just completely crush. I knew who was behind it. My wife, very wisely, some of my advisors said, look, take the high road here. Don't give it oxygen. You don't have to counterpunch every time you're hit. And then I talk about it historically. Grant showed restraint on Lee, prevented, I think, a guerrilla war in the South for years. H.W. Bush showed restraint in stopping in Kuwait in the first Gulf War. Didn't go all the way. And then some forgotten people in history, a Soviet submarine captain. You're a historian, Brian. I think you'll appreciate this. During the Cuban Missile Crisis, with the U.S. Navy blockade on Cuba, was ordered to fire a nuclear-tipped torpedo into our fleet. He refused. Saved the world by showing restraint. So each chapter has a different story in combat, what lesson was learned, and how I apply it to life.
Right. You could do that relationships. Should I dig in and fight every single battle? Or?
As husbands, we know.
Suck it up and suck it up another day.
Take the higher road. My wife was President Trump's hostage negotiator, so we never win arguments. But now I truly never win an argument.
She's tough to crack.
Yeah.
So she's going to outweigh you. Can you stick around?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Absolutely.
Congressman Michael Waltz, his book is out tomorrow called Hard Truths, Think and Lead Like a Green Beret. He'll be back in just a moment. We'll talk about this. Also, you were with Donald Trump last night.
That's right.
You were at the Pittsburgh Steelers game.
I was.
The inside story coming your way because the congressman promises to speak.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Trump has now made it so competitive, and I want people to understand how popular he is in Pennsylvania. And one thing, you know, honestly, that it really does have me concerned more than the polls is what I expected, but, you know, now he is using, and Musk is willing to actually show up at these kinds of rallies. And I witnessed that in Butler County a couple of days ago. You know, Musk is, most endorsements don't count for much in this business, but Musk is incredibly popular, and he has an appeal to a demographic that Democrats have been struggle with here. And to some people that they see him as, that's Tony Stark. He's the world's richest man, and he's undeniably a brilliant guy. So I think that is a situation for Democrats we would have to acknowledge that.
They're worried, Michael Walsh. They're worried about Pennsylvania, and they're worried that Musk figures this stuff out. And he's out there saying, register to vote. I'm going to give you random people $1 million if you register. I don't care if you vote. Just register to vote. Yeah. I don't care who you vote for. So it makes it legal.
Right.
But he's
not dictating which way you vote for everybody who's having a meltdown. I was with the president at the Steelers game last night. Western Pennsylvania, I mean, it's a religion. Loves their Steelers, and the crowd just
crushed the Jets, although they fell behind early, right?
Yeah. But the crowd just erupted. USA chants, turn around when they saw
put
he
on
was
television?
There. But one of the things that I think NBC was covering it. I don't know if they were going to put him up or put him on the Jumbotron or anything. They just saw him standing in the box, and the crowd all spun around and started chanting and cheering.
I imagine they didn't put him on the big screen.
Not that I saw.
Wow, it was pretty crazy. So what was the president's response to that?
Well, of course, he loved it. Yeah. That's why he was there, and this was on top of McDonald's and had a great day there. How ridiculous to say that was staged. Like, those were actual real customers, but you got to have security. The guy's almost been assassinated twice.
But he seemed to, like, when he was doing the job, sometimes you're mechanical about it. Okay, but I'll put the apron on. He loved it.
Well, it helps that he loves the food.
Right.
And every other time I have the honor to be on his plane on Trump Force One, it's either Papa John's, McDonald's, or Chick-fil-A.
Oh, really?
Yeah. One of those three
on
rotation.
Well, I hope for his sake, Chick-fil-A.
What's that?
Right? I hope for his sake, Chick-fil-A.
Well, it's God's chicken.
Don't you worry about
it's God's chicken.
Right.
Yeah, right.
But don't you worry about his cholesterol, because that's all I care about.
Look, the guy, I mean, and how ridiculous as the closing argument in the Harris campaign to try to portray Donald Trump as low energy or sometime somehow exhausted. I don't know if they have any data behind that. Or they're just sticking their finger in the wind and nothing else is working. Nothing she's saying is working and just taking a swing. I don't know, because I've never – you could see his staff around him is exhausted. He is powering through.
What was – I saw that he put on Truth Social that he loved Bret Baier's interview with Kamala Harris. What was your takeaway from that?
You know, I thought she was incredibly light on substance again, but did what some people wanted to see her do, which was show some fight. You know, she was combative. She, you know, he had to constantly try to get her back on message to actually answer the question. But at the end of the day, here's the problem. The last VP to win was H.W. Bush in 1988, and that's because people wanted a third Reagan term. Nobody wants a second Biden term. That's why they staged the political coup. So she can't run away, can't bring herself to run away from his record. And to the extent she does, she won't define what she's running towards. And so it's just been a muddled – her campaign is a reflection of the word salad. It's been a muddled mess.
So even on ABC, they were asking, can you understand his appeal and do you understand what is going on? Martha Raddatz asked that of Josh Shapiro. Listen, cut eight.
When you think about Donald Trump and his appeal to all of your voters in your states, to half of the voters in your states – what do you think the appeal of Donald Trump? What do you think they'd like about
him? I think there's a lot of folks who are frustrated that they don't see government solving problems in their communities. I think what people are craving are leaders who know how to get stuff done for them.
But even he answers like a Democrat, right? Even when he's trying to explain Trump, because he goes right to what government is doing or not doing. And what he completely misses, what Martha Raddatz, Shapiro, Democrats can't wrap their mind around, is conservatives want us to solve our problems and government to get out of our way.
Yeah.
Right? And it's about church. It's about neighborhoods. It's about communities. It's about family. Get government out of our way. We can solve our own problems. Leave us the heck alone.
Right.
And that's what he just can't conceptualize.
The name of the book, it's out tomorrow. You can pre-order it now. Hard Truths. Think and Lead Like a Green Beret. Michael Walsh put it out. Congressman, congratulations on the book. Great to see you in person.
Thank you.
All right. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, blocks from where we keep our Venezuelan gangs. The teens are allowed to sit around and cause havoc and recruit other teens. Isn't that great? Get this. Illegal immigrant families are complaining about terrorist gangster families recruiting their kids while they stay for free in a hotel. You can't make this up. This hour, we're going to be joined by Tom Carrico. He's a senior fellow with the International Security Program and the director of the Missile Defense Project. We got to talk about that THAAD missile system going into Israel, how long it takes to set up, why we can't get more. Also, Daniel Hoffman standing by. But first, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The danger to this country is the policies of Biden and Harris. Her fingerprints are all over this disaster, and I can't take four more years of this crap.
Israel has strengthened their hand by ignoring Harris and Biden and taking out terrorist after terrorist, not only Hamas, but also Hezbollah. Now they're blowing up the banks that house their money. Next up, Iran.
Number two.
Nikki is in. Nikki is helping us already. But people keep saying, when are you bring? They don't say, when are you bringing this one? Everybody is in, and Nikki is already in. You know, she's out campaigning.
Reaching across final weeks as Trump reaches out to Haley and Harris campaigns with Liz Cheney. Will either one of these moves deliver the battleground states in a razor-thin election?
Number one.
This is a real acceleration for Trump. I always warn people as a pollster, anything can happen in 3 weeks. And I wonder what could happen that's external that could change things, because certainly the pandemic, although much further out, that changed 2020. So anything can happen.
Yep, Mike Towery, a pollster, weighing in. 15 days to go, and both campaigns pan their opponents in their darkest manner possible. But only Trump has called out for it. We'll discuss the sprint to victory. And, of course, the backdrop of it all is what's going on with foreign policy, because Bibi Netanyahu is fighting for Israel's existence and now gained the upper hand because he's ignored this administration's terrible foreign policy instincts and restraints that we're witnessing right now with Ukraine, where they said, here's a great weapon system, but we can only hit certain places. Russia knows it, and they're taking advantage of it. We have to lift those restrictions. But let's bring in Dan Hoffman now, former CIA station chief, served in Moscow, Iraq, Pakistan, South Asia, Europe, all around. Dan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on the program, Brian.
So tell me about this geospatial satellite images that are so valuable for the military, and how these images got leaked out.
Yeah, this one's really disconcerting, especially after last year, the National Guard Airman Jack Teixeira leaked documents on Discord, classified documents. So in this case, these are two documents that we know of. There may be more, marked top secret. One document was entitled Air Force Continues Preparations for Strike on Iran. And they are satellite reporting from the National Geospatial Agency about Israel's Air Force exercises and plans to move their ballistic missiles. Very disconcerting there. Speaker of the House Johnson was to receive a briefing yesterday. I haven't heard him comment publicly on that. But look, there's a lot of work to be done on the forensics to determine who leaked this, what their purpose was, whether they've leaked other documents we haven't discovered yet. It's got a rather chilling impact on spying. I can tell you from my own experience, when these sorts of leaks happen, our sources ask us, like, can you protect me from, or are you not going to be able to protect the secrets I steal for you?
So they said it was a pro-Iranian group that would average have access and then publish this. Would that make sense?
Right. Well, it was out. It was disseminated on the Telegram app through an Iranian, it's a pro-Iranian site there, Middle East Spectator. That's the account name. So we don't have a whole lot of details about how the intelligence got there and who specifically might have been involved. But the FBI is really good at piecing together the forensics. I'm sure they'll do it, and I'm sure they'll figure out who was responsible. They have to start with a bigot list. That means everyone who had access to this intelligence. And remember, it was marked Five Eyes, which means that Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and the UK, in addition to the U.S., those officials were also reading that intelligence.
So when you look at what Israel's got to do next, what do they get from blowing up a bank where their financial transactions take place, which they did yesterday in Lebanon?
Yeah, so the two ways to get at the terrorists is to find, fix, and finish them. That is with counterterrorism strikes that we've seen Israel do so successfully against Hezbollah and Hamas. I mean, leadership is decimated in both of those terrorist groups. But the other way you got to get at them is the financing, the terrorist financing. And so that's part of what Israel is doing. Some of it is with kinetic strikes, and others is likely through banks and destroying the hawala, the informal regime by which terrorists funnel money to each other. So I'm sure the Israelis are doing a lot of work on that. But terrorist financing is really key to the overall effort.
So what do you think about the fact that Sinwar's wife was stolen, seen with a $32,000 handbag? What about the fact that he had tons of cash on him? He had an UNRWA, a UN ID on him, and was able to get access to all those things, sitting down this huge bucket of cash that was kept in tunnels that were relatively luxurious for him and his armed guard. What is your takeaway from Sinwar's lair?
Yeah, so the Hamas terrorists are planning terrorist attacks underground in relatively safety while innocent Palestinian civilians are dying above ground. The Palestinians could have voted these guys in over a decade, you know, almost two decades ago is kind of beyond the pale. I'm sure they regret it now because they're the ones who have suffered, and Hamas considers them pawns in their game. The more Palestinian civilians who die, the more that suits the Hamas and Iranian narrative, which sadly sometimes U.S. college students seem to fall into, criticizing Israel when they should be criticizing Hamas.
But I think things have certainly changed and their hands strengthened. What do you understand is happening with the tunnels in Hezbollah in Lebanon?
Yeah, so Israel has a lot of experience going into those tunnels and rooting out the terrorists and destroying the tunnels, both in Gaza and in southern Lebanon. Look, Israel's taken the fight to their enemies, and it's quite a change from October 7. I'm sure that in Tehran, they probably suspected that the Hamas terrorist attack on October 7 of 2023 would start a process where you might see Israel's demise. That's, I'm sure, what they hoped for, but quite the contrary. Iran enjoyed a lot of strategic depth with their terrorist proxies. You know, Iranians were happy to die for the Palestinians and Yemenis and Iraqis and Lebanese to die on their behalf in the front line fighting against Israel. But heaven forbid Iran gets dragged into that fight. Well, Iran's right in the crosshairs. Israel's going to launch strikes against them imminently. And this is potentially going to alter the balance of power in the Middle East. It's an opportunity for Israel and its backers, chiefly the United States, to do some good policy, post-conflict reconstruction, and maybe reshape some things in the Middle East. We don't want to miss this opportunity.
Here is what Vice President Kamala Harris said in wake of Sinwar's death. Cut 39.
It's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. But we have got to get this war over with. We got to get the hostages out. We need the war to end. In fact, we're sending Tony Blinken, Secretary of State, out next week to go and meet with the parties there. And the death of Sinwar, I believe, has removed an obstacle to that end. And so we've got to work at it, and we've got to work at it through diplomatic means, and that's what we intend to do. Listen, the reality of it is that the difficulty of it all is not new to any administration in recent history, and it cannot be the reason that we don't work at it around the clock and be vigilant. And that's what we're going to do. And I think it's very important that that's what we do.
What's your problem, if any? I have mine, but I want to get your expertise with the way she explained what should be next.
Well, she doesn't know who Sinwar's successor is. It could be his brother, Mohammed, who is just as bad or worse. And if there's one thing we've learned from the counterterrorism fight, it's that, yes, it's important to target lethally the leadership of these terrorist groups. And you do impact their ability to conduct terrorist attacks when you do that. If you kill bin Laden, that's obviously a good day for us. But it doesn't mean that peace is going to break out. And every time we talk about a ceasefire, or every time we talk about returning the hostages with a negotiated settlement, Hamas doesn't want – we're the only ones who seem to want that. No one in the Middle East, starting with the terrorists, want a ceasefire. and none wants a hostage deal. They want to keep fighting. And maybe, look, I'm not an expert on domestic politics like you are, but clearly we got an election in about 2 weeks, and the vice president is thinking about that. And that may be influencing her take on the war in Gaza, because so many in her party are concerned about the deaths of innocent Palestinians. They're right, but they blame the wrong people. They can blame Hamas for embedding themselves deliberately with civilians. That's really where their ire should be directed.
Saying y'all want this war over with. What are you talking about? Everybody wants the war over with, but the sure. way it ends will decide how quick it comes back. They have a chance to do something historic. Take these longstanding terrorist regimes who are on their doorstep every day and destroy them almost to the point of they become a non-factor. And their benefactor, Iran, is waiting for a return attack, which Iran is more than capable of issuing.
Right. Look, the first thing we're failing to realize here, I think that she failed to realize, is, look, a ceasefire doesn't end the war. It's just a momentary pause, yeah. ephemeral pause, right? The second thing is, we need a strategy, a real policy, rather than simply a de-escalation, which is all that this administration has talked about, or a ceasefire. What's the strategy? I would argue the strategy should be to cut Iran's links to those terrorist groups and make it clear to Iran, with military strikes, as many as might be necessary, that if they continue to fund and supply these terrorist proxies, we will continue to support Israel killing them, and we will target Iran for doing it. Iran has gotten off scot-free for too long, not just at this administration, but previous ones as well.
The North Koreans are now fighting with, just real quick, fighting with the Russians against the Ukrainians. The significance of that, I'm astounded this isn't made a bigger deal.
Well, look, the fact that North Korea is sending their own military over there to fight, and look, the Russians, I can tell you from my experience, they're going to look for opportunities to recruit these guys as sources. It's a great opportunity for them. But it's also quite telling that this relationship is what it is between Russia and the Hermit Kingdom. Russia's relying on North Korea for artillery, and now reportedly special forces officers from North Korea to go fight in Ukraine. Shades of like the Spanish Civil War, man. This is of grave concern to us.
Right.
And the fact that Russia has to provide something in return. And what North Korea wants is, you know, satellite technology to improve their ballistic missile capability. It's a force multiplier for North Korea's ability to threaten the region and beyond.
And they don't care who knows it. The North Koreans tend to stand out amongst Russians. And yet we still limit how our weapons that we give the Ukrainians are to be used, right?
Yeah, look, that war, you don't want these wars to go on as long as it takes, to use a word from, you know, phrase from the Biden administration. Finish the war. Morally and ethically, you should want to finish the war. That's why you've got to give Ukraine. We've never given them what they needed when they needed it. And now we're their forces are hamstrung by the fact that we deny them the capability to strike Russian military targets inside Russia. That's what would stop the war, not some appeasement of Vladimir Putin, who's out to get the best deal he can. He wants to topple the government in Kyiv. You know, he wants Zelensky's head on a stake. And that's where this administration has failed.
I hear you. And lastly, real quick, what targets would Dan Hoffman recommend that Israel hit, knowing what they're capable of and knowing that there would be a retaliation for it, possibly?
I don't know how worried I'd be about retaliation, because Iran knows that they'd be risking their regime. If they retaliate seriously, they could bring in the United States, and that would end Iran. Israel can end Iran. Iran's air force is completely ineffective. So Israel will own the skies, and that will impact how effectively they can launch these attacks. Look, Israel's looking at military targets. They're looking at Iranian leadership. Reportedly, Iran tried to kill Prime Minister Netanyahu with a drone. Maybe turnabout is fair play. Israel, I don't think, will take nuclear targets off the table either. And obviously energy infrastructure, oil infrastructure, they'll hit that too potentially. Israel is treating Iran like the enemy they are, and they're not afraid of Iran. And they know that there's a slippery slope to appeasement here. And they don't want to, you know, if that's where the United States is, okay. But Israel knows that they can strike back hard.
And they're doing their own thing because they know what's best for them. Daniel Hoffman, thanks so much. Always insightful. Appreciate it. All right, Tom Carrico was coming up at the bottom of the hour, but your calls are next. 1-866-408-7669. Also, you can follow me at the Culper Club. If you go to Culper Club the local community, I think that you would be able to get direct access. We'd tell you what's coming up. It's called Locals. And I got my own site there. This way, if you join the community, I can give you insight that you can't on the outside. So go do that. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I don't want to do that because that's a bad thing for the country. I don't want to do that. I don't know who said. I haven't said that I would, but they have done it. I've got attorney generals, DAs, they're all
right.
You take a look in Atlanta.
You're heavily investigated.
Vanity. Yeah. They went and met with them. It's all coming out of the Justice Department. They have done something never done in this country before. Now, it's been done in a lot of other countries, third world countries, banana republics, but never done. So when you ask that question, you really have to start by saying, well, they've done it to you. No, I'm not looking to do it to them at all, because that is a really, they have set a very bad precedent, however.
And that was Howie Kurtz talking to Donald Trump about the enemy within. And he's not talking about it. He's talking about Andy McCabe. He's talking about James Comey. He's talking about Peter Strzok. All these people launched an investigation into the president just to trip him up. That was the secret plan that was found out in the Durham report. Just read it. It was found out in the Mueller report. Please go through it. So when he talks about the enemy within, yeah. For 2.5 years, he had to deal with this. He thought his son was going to get arrested. His son-in-law, Jared Kushner, was getting elected. The guy's working for a dollar, negotiating the Abraham Accords, and all of a sudden they say he's conspiring with Russia. So that's what he's talking about, enemy within. We see it nonstop. They're also got two assassins trying to kill him here. And then Iran, we imagine separate. Got it. We don't know about the guy by the golf course. We don't know almost anything by the guy in Butler. But let's just assume the different one is Iran. Somebody's here. Many people are here threatening to kill him and his staff. So when you say enemy within, that's what you're talking about. Also, he's referring to the Seattle riots, the summer of love. Remember what happened in Minnesota. Remember the burning down of the police station. He says, I want to send in National Guard troops in there. Get these states to do it. The enemy there. Black Lives Matter, a lot of money's coming from the outside. A lot of these Palestinian protesters who are pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas. Where's that coming from? Well, that's got to be put down. It's not safe for Jewish kids to go to school. That's a problem. That's an enemy within. That's what he's talking about. He's not talking about going to arrest people who are surrogates against him. And I think they know that. Why they continue to overreact to everything he says 8 years later, it's a little mind-numbing. We'll find out about missile defense. Tom Carrico next.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
President Trump put in place a policy for the Middle East that not only destroyed ISIS and ended a war, but then also, we did 4 peace treaties in 5 months, thanks to President Trump and Jared Kushner. That diplomacy was terrific diplomacy. And President Biden came into office, inherited the best possible hand that any president in living memory has inherited in the Middle East. And he completely squandered it by trying to reach some sort of understanding with the Iranian regime by getting back into the Iran nuclear deal. And he alienated Israel, and he alienated our Sunni partners. Iran has enjoyed a $100 billion financial windfall because the Biden administration refuses to enforce Trump's oil sanctions. And that is the driver of instability and violence in today's Middle East.
So can you doubt anything Brian Hook is saying? They have a bounty on his head because he played a role in the taking out of Soleimani. Tom Carrico joins us now, senior fellow of the International Security Program, director of the Missile Defense Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. So it's unbelievable what's taking place, Tom, in terms of a military guy like yourself. Can you put in perspective what Israel has achieved?
Yeah, no, I think to the comments that were just made there, you know, again, the October 7 attacks were were an attack on Israel directly, but it was also an attack on the normalization of Israel with its neighbors. And for a while there, it seemed to be setting it back, but ultimately Iran continues to show its true colors. And on April 14 and on October 1, the direct attacks by Iran on Israel, very massive missile attacks and UAV attacks. It was a miracle that as many were shot down as they have been. But I think, again, Israel, two things. One, Iran has shown its true colors, and Israel has decided they're not going to take it anymore.
So they have David Sling, they got the Arrow system, and they got the Iron Dome. Why does Israel need the THAAD missile defense system, and how close do you think, how soon could they get it up and running?
Yeah, so first of all, it's there. It's already there in Israel. And I'll just say that Israel prioritizes, and the Israeli missile defenders will tell you this, they prioritize capacity, as in numbers, over capability. They've got several great systems, the Arrow, David Sling, as you mentioned, and that sort of thing. But there's no missile defenses in the world quite as good as American-made. Everybody knows that. And so there's a qualitative difference. There's also just more capacity as well. And so having an additional THAAD battery there it has the potential to strengthen Israel's hand in an attack. What I have said repeatedly in the press and what I'll say here is that I worry that the administration sent this THAAD battery with some strings attached. And of course, you never send a $1 billion strategic asset without some strings attached. But I can't help but wonder what kind of pressure was perhaps put on the Israelis to not do certain things in terms of attacking Iran. And that's of course, hard to speculate about.
Like don't hit their missile program. Don't hit their nuclear program.
Or their nuclear sites. Yeah, exactly.
Oil sites.
But the, you know, the reported UAS attack on Netanyahu over the weekend, again, I think is pushing them to not take it anymore. And frankly, I think that is what it's going to take. It's going to take a big response to communicate, and you know, deterrence exists between the ears of your adversary. That's the only place it exists. It has to exist in their head. And until the Iranians wake up the next morning and say, you know, this isn't fun anymore. We're not going to keep doing this. Then you really haven't deterred.
Right. Especially you blow up Haniyeh while he's at a guest house in Tehran. And, you know, Michael Walsh was just telling us, the congressman, you know, with the military background on armed forces, says that the Grand Ayatollah is in hiding because they don't know what Israel is capable of because they've astounded the world of what they've done.
And that's probably a smart thing to do because the targeting of folks in Iran, targeting of the leaders of just decimating the leadership of Hezbollah, very impressive operation. And this is, you know, people tend to disregard or put, you know, use the phrase escalate to de-escalate as an aspersion. But I think the Israelis seem to be making pretty good use of the concept.
So do you think the THAAD missile system could be in place as early as today? Right. It's not complex.
Yes.
All right. So having said that, people have said you want to hit Iran, but do you want to hit him so devastating way that you're guaranteed to hit back? Should that be something Israel keeps in mind?
I'm sure they're in a precarious security situation. They're the best judges, I suspect, of the risk, their own risk tolerance in terms of response. I've been intrigued at the way in which they've gone after Hezbollah, for instance, and these several Iranian leaders. It's been very targeted in terms of leadership and that sort of thing. So it's not been carpet bombing. It's been there's some of that, but there's overall a fairly targeted strategy and aggressive, to be sure, but also targeted.
Tom Carrico, our guest, he's director of the Missile Defense Project, the Center for Strategic and International Studies. So we watched China try to essentially smother Taiwan in a drill, surround it, and then discourage America from getting involved, thinking you can't really affect anything anyway, and maybe have a strategy where they hit us as they try to take Taiwan. Taiwan says, just give me missile defense. Have we given them what they wanted, and have we given them what they need? They
know,
pay for it, by the way. They write checks. They have money.
Yeah. You're going to need a lot more of a number of things sea mines, land mines, coastal defenses, anti-ship missiles, to name a few. And then likewise, of course, more air and missile defense. And there's nowhere near enough. I mean, there's no amount of air defenses that will be sufficient, as it were, to for Ukraine or for any of these other places. But I will tell you, the U.S. Army, and last week was just a big conference for the U.S. Army. They are, to their credit, accelerating the Patriot production quite a bit, but it's not enough yet anyway. And that's why basically we've had to suspend all of our Patriot Pac-3 sales globally to the other 18 nations that are operating Patriot, with the exception of Ukraine. And look, we have to help Ukraine beat off Russia, and it is becoming a world war of sorts with 10,000 Koreans headed over there, it sounds like. But continued attention to the production of that stuff is absolutely critical.
Absolutely. We watched the leak of satellite imaging, highly sophisticated military satellite imaging from, for they say, a pro-Iranian group out there. People look beyond that and say, I wonder if there's an American point of interest here to stop or diminish the effectiveness of an Israeli attack on Iran. What's your take?
You're talking about the intelligence leak.
Yes.
Yeah, that's, and this is a family show, that's pretty messed up that this would be released to anybody, let alone the Iranians, and it'd be released by the Iranians. Hard to speculate without really know what's going on there, but it would certainly appear to be disturbing. And if it is indeed the case that this was what was planned, that's pretty messed up.
Yeah, and we just don't know how that's going to affect anything. Lastly, what about a leader not talking to an ally for who's at war on at least two fronts for months, for weeks, if not months? And I'm talking about Joe Biden and Benjamin Netanyahu.
Yeah. So look, there's a lot of dimensions to that relationship. The Israelis have to have the material to frankly conclude this and win. I would say that there needs to be a strategy to win in Ukraine and with Israel, because we can't the United States of America can't afford to be hemorrhaging FAD interceptors or standard missile interceptors or anything else for that matter indefinitely. We've got to give the Ukrainians the ability to shoot back and shoot into Russia and the authorization to do that. When you send strategic assets over there, you need to have a strategy to win that accompanies them.
So lastly, the President Trump said, if I get in, I'm going to set up an iron dome for our country. We do not have proper missile defense. What's feasible and possible with a country this size?
Yeah, look, there's the first thing to note is that there's a lot of different kinds of missile threats coming in. We've got the ICBMs from North Korea, things like that. We're getting a little better on that front, but it's the cruise missiles that, look, they're targeting Ukraine on a weekly and sometimes daily basis. The air defense and cruise missile defense, we've got to get a lot more of that. Go watch the opening scene to Olympus Has Fallen, and you'll be spooked about the UAS and the cruise missile kind of threats. That giant windows of vulnerability there.
Do we have hypersonics?
So look, we are testing and soon to be deploying some offensive hypersonic missiles, and we are certainly developing and recently awarded a contract for a hypersonic defense interceptor. Unfortunately, it's not going to be here fast enough. We're looking at the 2030s. For that particular missile, so we do need to continue to look for ways to get capability earlier and to pull things to the left.
Yeah, well, that's nice because the Houthi rebels have it. The men in moccasins have hypersonics. Amazing. Tom Carrico, thanks so much. Appreciate your very rare expertise. Thanks for joining us.
All right, thanks so much.
Sure. All right, Tom, helping us out. It's important. I mean, is there anything more important than having a shield for your own country? Trump realizes that right away. There was a while there was pushback. Oh, missile defense will never be effective. Why? Tell that to Israel. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Tom Brady has officially become a part owner of the Las Vegas Raiders, although Brady himself is still fully owned by the Giants.
All right, that was a good shot for the Giants, but when you win six other Super Bowls, I'm not too sure how that lands. That it makes me think that there is, I don't know, more to know. Let's talk more sports.
More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
Two of the most successful sports franchises in sports today, the Dodgers and Yankees, will face off for the first time of the World Series since 1981. The Yankees are seeking their 20th World Series title, their first since 2009. New York is 8-3 against the Dodgers when they play in interleague games. But 1981, you're talking about Tommy Lasorda, but you're talking about Reggie Jackson, and you're talking about the 77 and 78 the Yankees won, 81. The Dodgers bounced back and took it. That should be fun. Should be exciting. Disappointing in New York because the Mets fell in six to the Dodgers, but pretty good. Next, music may be the best medicine after surgery. A new study presented by the American College of Surgeons to the Clinical Congress in 2024 said that simply pressing play on your favorite playlist can be a game changer. They did this study. Patients are tuned into reporting feeling significantly less pain the day after surgery simply by playing music. We're talking about 19% reduction on the pain scale to a 7% reduction. This to me sounds weird.
But though, if it puts you in a happy place, though, I mean, it gets your mind off of the surgery, maybe the mind off the pain. You listen to your favorite music. I mean, I'm sure you'd have a whole slew of country artists that you would listen to if you had a painful surgery.
I don't know. I don't think if I'm missing my pancreas, I don't really know if that's going to bring me through. Next, the average person consumes 80 pounds of sugar each year. The eye-popping number, a survey of 2,000 people conducted by Talker Research, they found the typical Americans ingest that much, 99 grams of sugar daily, surpassing the sugar content of a 12-ounce can of soda. The excessive consumption comes despite 85% of respondents actively working to reduce sugar in their diet. The question is, it's everywhere. The survey explored the emotional triggers behind sugar. Stress, 39%, boredom, 36%, fatigue, 24%, loneliness, 72%. The thing is, you find out about sugar, it's in pasta, it's in everything. It's not just taking scoops and putting in your coffee.
It's the carb count, and it's the hidden sugars that aren't listed as
like,
sugars.
Like sushi, too. Do you know sushi has sugar in it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but you also look for ingredients like maltodextrin. That doesn't technically count on the nutrition label as sugar, but it gets converted and it's worse than sugar and it has the same terrible effects as sugar, not counting 10, 15, 20 other ingredients we can't pronounce that turn to sugar.
Next, parents should not discourage kids from watching TV. They should join them. Overall, parent-child co-use is helpful for supporting young children's development in the digital age. Other studies would suggest that, for instance, parents using digital media and children can boost language skills. So don't just isolate them. Go use this and get to go over to the corner. But no one's watching television anymore. That's concerning me, Pete.
Yeah, it's not that way. I see this with young people like my niece. Sometimes they get so immersed into looking at the phone and the videos, they become zombies. They don't know what's going on around them. They're just watching that phone for a half hour, 45 minutes, instead of actually doing something that they can learn from.
Yeah, next, something unrelated. Washington State's has a problem. It's a raccoon problem. People are calling 911 because about 100 raccoons are just harassing people. People are having to flee their property after 50 to 100 raccoons descended upon them and were acting aggressively. They always act aggressively. This is what we're hearing. They said the raccoons were becoming increasingly more aggressive, demanding food, and they would hound her day and night, this woman said, scratching at the outside of her home or door. If she pulled up her car, they would surround the car, scratch at the door, surround her if she went from her front door to her back. This is a nuisance. Bridget Meyer, spokesperson for the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, said by email that under state law, it's illegal to feed large carnivores such as bears or cougars, but they are allowed to feed raccoons.
And that's the problem, because this lady that's being harassed by the raccoons has been feeding them, so they're used to it. So now they're following her everywhere.
Next, top U.S. states to visit where people have claimed UFOs. Number one. No, I'll start with number five. New York. We're fifth with a total number of 6,405 claims of sightings by 1,301 people. Okay, so one person's getting six on an average of six sightings?
Yeah.
Oregon is four.
Top five.
Right, they just look for the same. I guess if you know what you're looking for. A total of 3,666 sightings for Oregon since 1974, one occurring for every 1,156 people. Florida, they are third, 11,000 UFO sightings since 1974. 1,444 Floridians have seen it. Washington is number two with 7,000 sightings, and California is number one. This has to be because of the size of California, am I correct?
That, and it's also location, too, where there's more wide open spaces in California, they say. That gives people more of an opportunity to see unidentified flying objects in the sky. But it makes me wonder about you. You like New York, you like Florida, so you like the two of the top five places where you sight UFOs.
I know, but I have yet to see one. Maybe I just don't know what to look for.
That's true. I mean, you could be seeing them every single night.
Maybe I'm willing to say, I don't know, and I'm not curious.
Or watch more of the X-Files.
Right, absolutely,
curious.
Which I never
You'll want to believe.
Absolutely. But I will say this. Special thank you to everyone who came out in beautiful Peekskill last night, including Governor George Pataki, including Congressman Mike Lawler, and everybody that came out and got tickets to History, Liberty, and Laughs. What a great audience, great bunch of people. People drove as far as Boston to come down and see. And this is a historic. The Paramount's an historic theater. The whole thing is on Fox Nation. It is archived on Fox Nation right now, so you can watch the whole thing. It's unscripted. It brings history to life in a fun, entertaining, inspirational, motivational way. Next stop will be Jacksonville. So WOKV listeners, get ready. I'm coming February 15th with the whole crew. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Make sure you keep it here because every show is valuable. Every segment is a must listen.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.